You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsports.com.
And it is a beautiful, beautiful Monday night here at Last Word Soccer Club Radio. My name is Russ McKenzie, joining you live with Matt Pollard and Sean Garmer. How you guys doing?
Megan Rapinoe, will you marry me?
So you have the thing.
She hasn't responded on Twitter, so we'll see.
I doubt that she'll respond tonight.
Okay, she can think about it. I've got time.
I wonder how many requests she gets a day for that.
That is a good question, yeah. Sean. I suppose we'll have to. That would be an interesting Twitter statistic to look at.
I really gotta wonder, and I'm sure that she, you know, is totally interested. Anyway, moving right along, we're joining you right after the final whistle of the inaugural match. The opening of the 2015 campaign for the U.S. women to win the World Cup. And they faced a massive, probably one of the toughest opponents that they will face in the tournament in Australia, and they beat them 3-1. And this coming really after some questionable first half jitters, it looked like. I don't know what the story was there, but guys, what do you make of this? Starting with you, Matt. What do you make of this? Because it really was the tale of two halves, wasn't it?
I would almost say it's a tale of the opening 30 minutes and then the final 60 minutes overall. I think Australia came out all guns blazing. I think we saw a little bit of the hangover from a few of the warm-up games where the U.S. looked a little bit disjointed defensively and they weren't quite clicking offensively. And I think at that point then, maybe about 10 minutes after Megan Rapinoe's first goal, I think they really settled down. I think they fixed a lot of the issues at the back and then they started clicking offensively. You know, people look at the scoreline and say, oh, the U.S. beat Australia. Australia's a decent team, but the U.S. won in the end. I don't think this is indicative at all at how good Australia is. And I don't think the scoreline does not show, I think, how good this will be for the U.S. going forward in what it forced them to do and where they can go from here on out.
You know, Sean, what do you think?
I think, you know, we were discussing earlier that it's what Matt said is the truth, really. It's you're coming. They came out, and I think the U.S. expected for them to sit back and kind of give them a lot of respect, soak up some of the pressure, you know, counter, use that speed on the counter. They came out and said, no, we're going to take it to you. And you could really tell that, you know, that defense was really suffering at the beginning. They were scrambling. They did not look settled at all. I mean, it just it didn't look like the same U.S. team we're used to seeing, you know. And even going forward, unless Megan Rapinoe was really doing anything, the team wasn't functioning really. And until we saw the first goal, and then things kind of settled down a little bit.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that first goal. It came off really. The reason that goal happened was because of Julie Johnston, and you don't that the range and the accuracy of with which she placed that ball. That ball doesn't happen. That goal does not happen without Julie Johnston. And yeah, it was a beautiful strike, but it went in off of a deflection. And to that point, really, that was the only really quality chance the U.S. had had. You know, they relied. Someone tweeted on. Someone put out a tweet there, and I did retweet it at the time it happened. Was the last time we relied on solo this much? We haven't relied on solo this much since the attack on the Death Star. Matt Demelin. I just want to put that out there. Not Demoline. We have you. We see you. We see you there. You know, and it's true. We relied on Hope Solo a little bit more than I really was. Really, for most fans of this team, we relied on Hope Solo a little bit more than probably we should have. That said, the ladies go into, you know, a Friday match versus Sweden. It really is an interesting dichotomy here with how they played in the first half versus how they played in the second. You could see them figuring it out. And I remember back when I was covering back last year, last fall, when I covered them in the CONCACAF Women's Championship. I remember seeing that first game, which they only won 1-0, by the way. It was a matter of not being able to find their rhythm. As I recall it now, it was a moment where they really had to build themselves into it. You know what I mean? And I think going into this match, again, I can't remember who I was telling. Oh yeah, Ty Bailey from Last Word. We were having a conversation on the side here, and I said to him, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And I think we saw the beginning of a marathon. And you know, Jill Ellis came out and said it before the match that she did not want this to be their best match of the tournament. Of course, because you know, Australia is a challenge, but there are bigger challenges going forward. I mean, this competition is not a joke, and it doesn't get any easier from here. Matt. What do you think tactically? Where were we at in this game? Do you think that she could have made some adjustments going in, or
I think definitely. I think right before the third goal was scored, you know, I think the game was a little bit in the balance. Australia was starting to come with a rush. I would have been okay with the sub. I mean, we don't know where Alex Morgan is as far as her injury recovery or anything like that, but there were some really weary legs out there. I'm not sure who I would have gone to the bench, but I definitely probably would have made a substitution probably about the 60th, maybe the 65th minute. I think that could have helped. And in particular, you saw after that second goal went in, you know, I noticed a rather massive decay in time in the Australia's rate of high press. So if you're looking at that, you know, bring in a holding midfielder or somebody, sustain possession, play keep away, and really, you know, almost, I'd say almost play a boa constrictor almost to Australia's will if you're able to keep the ball away from them. Because I know Sweden is not going to fold that late in the game if they are down on Friday. And that's something that needs to be talked about, discussed, and the U.S. cannot have as bad a start as they had today.
I think, you know, it started from the beginning. Me and Russ were talking on, you know, before we started here, that I really think, and it was talked about in the pregame, the whole, do you need to start Wambach here? Because this is not a, you know, a power game. It's your match, Australia speed for speed. Avi wasn't at her best in this game at all. She had that one header that would have probably been in if she was on form. You know, I don't really want to get into whether she should have played, you know, for her club team or not. But I think, you know, maybe not Alex Morgan, but I think, you know, Kirsten Press probably should have played up front. And you have someone else play in her spot because she looked really out of position there.
You know, but I'm gonna jump in here, Sean. I totally agree with you, and not only do I agree with you, the announcers agreed with you too. You know, yeah. You know, watching where Kristen Press was when she scored that goal, that's where she needs to be. You know, she made a very intelligent run inside. The most of the first half, she was running around on the outside on the flank, and I don't quite get why this team is so obsessed with moving up and down the flanks like they are. It really doesn't make any sense. And it's very frustrating to watch because, again, they are much more talented than this. We've seen it in the past. Heck, we saw it versus Mexico in the second to last warm up match where they just demolished that team 5-1. They totally broke them down. But in this game, they were the ones getting broken down, and you know. Especially on the Australia goal, on the one Australia goal, it was very evident that some of these players on the back line really need to work on their positioning, and you could see it. It was almost like I think somebody said it was almost like watching Sunderland tactically.
Well, I mean, Russ, the one thing I would say to that, you know, I even before her second goal, Megan Rapinoe is my woman of the match, and it's not even close on this one. I thought she catalyzed everything offensively, you know, maybe a little bit lucky on the first goal. You know, she helped set up Sydney Leroux, who made that run, who found Kristen Press for the second goal, and then she finished it off. So I think some of what was initially in the first half where they were going up and down their left side to Rapinoe was maybe a bit out of necessity because Rapinoe was stretching the field out wide, so she was an easy outlet for the back line that was under press. And I think she was having her way against the Australian defense. So I think that was a little bit of what that was what Australia was giving them offensively to create. But I agree completely. Push press further up into the midfield and go up through them. That's in the danger area. You know, overall, I don't think they nearly fed press as much or Sydney Leroux at all what they could have gotten. And I think the only reason why I'm not saying this, I don't feel the same way about Abby Wambach, is because every single set piece chance they were going to her, and Abby really should have had a goal on that diving header in the first half.
Oh, she really should have. She doesn't miss headers like that. And you could tell that she really wanted that one back. 100% wanted that one back.
Well, to your point, Matt, like even Sydney Leroux was on the left side going at it against, you know, the Australia back line over there. So either her or Megan Rapinoe would switch, and she was sending in more crosses than she was getting in balls up front.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the thing. You know, maybe Ellis is too attached to the idea of Wambach. Now, we're talking about the most prolific goal scorer in U.S. women's history. So, I mean, she's a machine, but she didn't play for a club team, and maybe that just took away a little of her edge. And you know, I feel like I'm killing a bald eagle chick by saying that, but it was very apparent that they were lacking a level of creativity up front. Just a little bit until the second half when they figured it out. You know, in the lead-up, Kristen Press and Sydney Leroux were on the top in a 4-4-2, and they were very effective, incredibly effective. And that's really that kind of chemistry. You can't buy it. You can't buy it. I understand, you know, the idea is Alex Morgan's going to come in and you know, once she gets healthy, she's going to come in and play big minutes. And Abby Wambach and Alex Morgan have that kind of chemistry as well. But up until the point where Alex Morgan is healthy and 100%, you got to think about putting Kristen Press up top. You know, we interviewed her here last fall. And the desire, and this is the thing that struck me, and I on the podcast version, I may just tack on the interview after. It really was palpable how much she wanted to compete at this level. You got to give her a chance and put her in the best position possible to do exactly that. And I'm not sure that Jill Ellis put her in the correct position to where she would be the most effective. She put Abby Wambach where she would be most effective, but that didn't reap any benefit in this match. Now, did you guys watch Sweden-Nigeria earlier today?
I did not, unfortunately.
I was at work.
Okay, fair enough. I did. And if the U.S. plays as sloppy as they did in the first half defensively,
it's 3-0.
It's 3-0 Sweden on Friday. It really is. Now Nigeria tied Sweden, and I just want to take this moment to give a tip of my cap to the Nigerian women's program, because I really think that they are really underrated to come back from what they did and really take it to Sweden. They didn't stop. They weren't playing for a draw. They were pressing them, and they were pressing them on speed on the wings. This U.S. team you saw it tonight. They had problems with speed on the wings, and it all had to do with positioning. It didn't have to do with speed. They have that. You saw that when Sauerbrunn came charging back to save that one goal that ended up in a corner in the second half. You saw that with Julie Johnston after she gave service into the box to score that goal on the very next sequence, I think it was, where she covered so much space so fast, and Australia kills you with speed as well, but they kill you with speed in the middle. It's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Russ, that's where I was saying, the way that the game happened, this was almost exactly what the United States needed, because they had a god-awful beginning, they adjusted, and really, I've been tweeting this out, I'm talking with a few Australia fans, I think this was a good learning experience from Australia, because Australia came out, they were chomping at the bit, and ultimately they played a better team who's been here before, who were able to find another level. I think this is a good – now where the U.S. finished is a perfect starting point for where they need to be against Sweden, and I think pending Alex Morgan's health going into Friday, I think this is what they needed in order to get the offense clicking. If they come out – if they played Sweden and they came out the way that they did today, I think they absolutely lose this game. I think because of this game and the way it happened, it was good for getting their engine going so that they're in fourth and fifth gear come Friday when they'll need it against the Swedes.
I'm not even sure if they're going to get up to fourth or fifth gear. I think we've hit about third.
Okay, yeah, we're in third. We're going to need fourth for Sweden. Yeah. So if we're talking about like an incremental jump, I thought this was exactly what they needed, both in terms of the result and the performance and the way the narrative happened for the match.
Well, that's literally what you're looking at with Sweden. I mean, you saw them. Their back line is good, but they're a little bit slower. So I think the U.S. can victimize that a little bit, because they are going to have speed up front. And honestly, Alex Morgan looks good. She looked good in the short amount of time that she was on the field. She was on for about 10 minutes. And her first touch was met with thunderous, screaming of 12-year-old girls, which is perfectly fine. But it was quite loud when she got the ball, and you saw that, and you kind of saw that hold up play you were missing from Abby Wambach when Morgan got the ball. She was able to hold up the ball effectively and let the attackers come in and really set up. So I'm wondering here if some of the issues, and I don't want to say it's going to be all of the issues, because I think it's going to need to be to win this trophy, to win this tournament. The U.S. women's national team is going to have to be more than a one-woman show. But that said, I think a lot of issues that the U.S. has been having in these friendlies maybe stems from the fact that they are used to playing with Morgan and playing a certain way, and maybe they can't adjust as well as one might like to think, which is a problem, because if Morgan goes down in the middle of this tournament, what are they going to do? On this show, I've talked a lot about the U.S. men not having a backup plan for Jose Altidore.
They still don't have a backup plan for Jose Altidore.
Yeah, they don't.
Jossie Zardes scored his first U.S. men's national team goal. Jordan Morris is doing his thing. Bobby, we still don't have a backup plan for Jose Altidore.
Hey, but at least people are scoring, right?
But I'm sorry. Continue your point, Russ.
No worries. I set myself up for that. Anyway, maybe they need to go back to if they continue to use Morgan off the bench, maybe they need to put press up top, and then we get to see, and I tweeted this out during the match. You get to see Press doing her best Clint Dempsey impression to LaRue's Obafemi Martins. I think it's that serious. I think that this club, this team, can really break down teams if they're set up correctly on the field. You put players on the field in the best position you can, so they can actually succeed. And that's, I don't feel that that's what's going on right now. It concerns me still. And even though the U.S. won by two goals tonight, even though they showed themselves to be able to dominate teams and break down teams, how much of that was conditioning? How much of that was simply the U.S. having better facilities and better training and so forth than Australia? Because that, you got to figure that that's a factor, and that's not going to be the way it is against Sweden, because they do have a professional league. It's going to be a very interesting. I think Friday's match is going to be the most telling out of anything. Because it'll be a weather vane about of what we're going to see going forward from this team.
Mm-hmm. And for what it's worth, Russ, 538. I don't want to call it ESPN's analytics, so to speak. I'm still not entirely sure what 538 is, but in any case, with the win today and Sweden Nigeria tying 3-3, the U.S. is an 80.9% to win the group and a 99.1% to advance. And a draw against Sweden on Friday of any sort would virtually guarantee advancing.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You know, they got a little bit lucky they got the result that they needed, so they can continue to rest Morgan until the group stage, and that's really going to be the trick. How long can you let Morgan sit and get herself right with the world before having to actually use her in big minutes? I don't want to say that they can sit back, because certainly Sweden and Nigeria are both very, very tough opponents. But I think that they can breathe a sigh of relief, because they got the result. They got the result earlier from Sweden, Nigeria, and they draw. They're in. That's it. But we're talking about a team. Let's liken it to the men's game for a second. We saw Germany, right, last year, totally dominate teams, people were disappointed that they didn't dominate the U.S. the way they had dominated teams prior, and then you see them go out and totally crush Brazil. I think that we're a little bit spoiled on the women's side. We almost feel like they should be going out and beating teams by double digits like the Germans did to Ivory Coast yesterday. That game was 10-0. You don't see those. You don't see many of those anymore in the women's game, and a lot of programs have caught up to each other to make it a more level line. But you know, you have a team like the Germans who totally demolished and clinically destroyed Ivory Coast. Totally destroyed them. It was never close. You have teams like Spain who have come up through the ranks and have actually put together a pretty good program. You have Canada who are the host country, and they are totally amped to take on teams like the U.S. and take it to teams like the U.S. You don't see these teams respecting the U.S. respecting quote unquote like you said, Sean. Like they used to. It's going to be a tough road. And if the U.S. women are going to advance as far as they want and win the tournament, they are going to need to all their pieces in the right place. And other than Rapinoe and Abby Wambach was in the right place, Megan Rapinoe was in the right place. But you got to wonder why Sydney LaRue was so isolated over on that side, and then all of a sudden on the Kristen Press goal, it all fits together. And according to how they lined up, Kristen Press was out of position on that goal. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting too deep into this. Maybe I'm overthinking. But you know, it really needs to. They really need to solidify their game going into Friday, because again, they play disjointed, as you said, Matt. It's going to be 3-0.
I agree with everything you said, Russ.
Sorry about
that. Jill Ellis knows what she's doing. They have a veteran team. I think they're going to be fine. It's just a matter of, is Alex Morgan 100%? And then if not, how much is she going to be able to go? And are they going to need her in the end? And, you know, at the end of the day, if it's tied in the 60th minute, at that point, I'm okay with, you know, let's not sit back, but let's play for the draw, essentially, against Sweden, especially if Alex Morgan isn't able to go. So I'm not worried. I'm certainly concerned. I'm wary of Sweden. I am not worried at all about this Friday or this team getting out of the group.
Oh, I wouldn't be worried about them getting out of the group, but I think, you know, if you're in that similar situation, you know, 75 minutes, 80th minute, and you have an opportunity to bring on a chip like Alex Morgan and to turn the tide and maybe get a 2-1 or something like that, I mean, I think you go for it. I don't think you go with the whole let's get a draw and whatever. Yes, of course, you got to cover yourself and make sure you don't, you know, let that goal go in for Sweden either, but you know, Sweden's in the more desperation mode that the U.S. is not in right now. So if you are able to capitalize on that and get the, you know, let's say the win that you're not expecting at that point, I think that puts you in pole position, and that's what you want to be in. I think going into that last game against Nigeria where it doesn't matter, and maybe you can rest Alex Morgan, you don't have to worry about bringing her on at all.
But doesn't that make Sweden the more dangerous team here? Because you back an animal into a corner, they're going to attack. And we've seen it so many times in both the women's tournament and the men's tournament where the team that really needs the result outplays the team that really doesn't, no matter how big the talent level. We've seen it in sports across the world of sports that this happens. So my question to you is, doesn't that make Sweden the more dangerous team and you need all your pieces right?
Oh, yeah, and then plus you've got your former coach over there on the sideline. That also is another little cog in there.
Yes,
that
it is.
Not normally there for other situations, you know.
You know, it's one of those storylines, too, that really, you know, begs for the press corps to just churn out pieces on, because you know, it's going to be a very interesting game going in, because again, the coach, Sweden's coach knows the U.S. team very well, and she knows these players. It was a very tough test versus Australia. Sweden's going to be a lot closer, and you know, maybe taking a half off isn't the best idea. Anyway, gentlemen, we're going to wrap it up right here. Any closing thoughts?
Go USA.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all I got. That's all I need to say.
Hey, this special announcement is for Super X Mike, LL Sports Mike on Twitter. About 10 minutes ago, he said, just started listening. Start from the beginning again. you're in luck, Mike. We are going to post this show as a podcast in a few minutes, wherever fine podcasts are procured and distributed, i.e. Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and of course, LastWordOnSports.com. On behalf of Sean Garmer and Matt Pollard, you've been listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, U.S. Women's National Team postgame, only here, LastWordOnSports.com. Good night and good luck.
Listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
It's Thursday night. You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. My name is Russell McKenzie, joined now by Alec Rivera. It has been a pretty long hiatus here. I apologize for the technical difficulties the last couple of weeks. But we are back on the air, only here at Last Word on Sports. .com. Alec?
Hey, how's it going?
So, a quick funny story. After the Red Bulls took, we'll get into MLS playoffs later, but just a little fun anecdote. My phone auto-dialed Alec, after the Red Bulls beat Sporting Kansas City, a week ago, which is genuinely why we weren't here last week. I was actually at Red Bull Arena. It was a great crowd. Anyway, my phone auto-dialed by accident, Alec, after the game was over, just in time for him to hear profanity from most of the people marching out of Red Bull Arena aimed at DC United. We'll get into that later. Alec, how you feeling?
I'm shellacked but confident.
So, we're going to get right into it here. Just changing gears a little bit, we have U.S. Women's National Team forward Kristen Press. By the way, the U.S. Women's National Team has qualified for the World Cup and also returned to regional dominance, so winning the CONCACAF Women's Championships here in Philadelphia just a couple of weeks ago. Kristen, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm fine, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, it's a genuine pleasure to welcome you on the show. We're going to jump right into it here. We've actually have a fan question later, but first, real quick, I want to go all the way back to your time at Stanford. What were some of your favorite memories playing there? And do you and Alex Morgan, Herbie and Kawa alum, give each other grief regarding your schools?
Well, not too long ago, I was a Stanford Cardinal, and I guess the college soccer system is fantastic in the United States. It gives athletes an opportunity to study and play at the same time, which is really rare in soccer on the international side. And it's a really big jump from youth soccer to college soccer. It's just the expectations are a lot higher. The pressure is a lot higher. There's a lot more people games. It's a very professional environment. So I think at first Stanford was really tough for me just to figure out the level of fitness and dedication that I needed to excel. But I think some of my best memories were just being pushed by my teammates every day in preseason. I really learned how to be a pro, how to put soccer first, what kind of dedication and commitment it takes to excel at this level. And I learned that through the older players on the team showing me and my teammates in that grind with me every day. And that's really special to me. So with Alex at Cal and with Sid at UCLA, of course, we give each other grief time to time. I went on the Pac-12 network now with Sid the other day. And so, of course, when the games are on and our football teams are playing, our soccer teams are playing, we have little bets at camp and things like that. But, you know, now we're all together and we're all teammates, and it's nice to be wearing the same jersey as those very dangerous boards.
Out of all your coaches from youth soccer, to your time with Magic Jack, to playing in Sweden, which was the one that had the greatest influence on your career?
I would have to say the coach that had the greatest influence on my career was my first coach in Sweden. I played for a team called Gothenburg FC, for just one season after Magic Jack and before I went to my most recent team, Tyresö. The coach was Torbjörn Nilsson. He was a phenomenal soccer player himself. He was a forward, and he took a special interest in me as a player. And at that time, of course, with my American background, a lot of the tendencies I had were just sort of an athletic running forward, you know, a lot of straight runs, horizontal, simple style that I had, and I sort of trusted on my speed and strength to just overpower defenders. And he kind of took me under his wing and really showed me what football's about. I think it kind of transformed my perspective on the game, my enjoyment of my game, and also my execution, just developing those little nuances and timing of the runs and opposite movements and how to just position your body 5 degrees different, and it can open up so much of the field. So I think he had a profound effect on my career, and especially with how much I love the game. I think that playing under him was the moment that I really fell back in love and found my passion for football.
And lastly for me, and then we'll get to Alec, how excited are you to compete in the upcoming World Cup? I know that there's the 15-year drought with the U.S. Women's National Team in that competition, but you got to be real excited about it.
Yeah, so this will be my first World Championship, hopefully with the United States National Team, and as a female footballer in the United States, this is it for us. This is the biggest stage. There's only, you know, and right now in our sport, there's only space for 20 to 30 Americans that are full-time professionals. So it is so competitive to be, you know, in that spot. And I put my entire life towards this since I was 5 years old, and to have the opportunity to even play in the qualifiers, just having won that and working towards this World Cup goal, it really is a dream to come true. It's been my only dream since I was a little girl, and now it's right in front of me. And I know that there's a lot of work from now until then to stay healthy, to stay fit, to compete for my spot on the roster, to compete for my spot in the starting lineup. There's so much work to be done, but just having that motivation, knowing that it's, you know, just a half a year away until we'll be, you know, in the World Cup is phenomenal. It's so much fun.
For me personally, I gotta say I've been watching this team since playing that tournament since its inaugural tournament, really. And just it's really one of the best. I think it's one of the best competitions around. That's just my opinion. Alec,
I 100% agree with you.
Alec, what do you got?
So, having said just a moment ago that there's a lot of work ahead of you. I'd actually like to look at the work that you have behind you after the CONCACAF Women's Championship. Can you just sort of describe both yours and the national team's journey through that tournament? And, I mean, at the first game, it wasn't really easy going. There were a lot of questions heading into the first game. But by the end, I think a lot of those questions were not only answered, but the U.S. is again seen as the major threat going into the World Cup here.
Yeah, I think that our game winning home streak right now, and obviously we hosted the tournament. We're ranked one, so no matter who the opponent is, we're expected to win. But in our qualification, and this has been true for the past few cycles, there's an expectation that we just dominate entirely. One nothing win is not enough. And so it's a kind of a unique situation in that winning isn't good enough in itself, and it's about performance, and it's about kind of proving to the world what we're capable of. And this has been a pretty tumultuous year for our team, obviously, with a new coach coming in just a few months, two or three camps before the qualification, with totally different ideologies and tactics and player preferences. So it was kind of a lot to package together and put out on such a big stage so quickly. And I think it's a testimony to our team to see just our development through that tournament. Right away after the first game, we sat down with the coaches and they went through everything that they wanted from us that we didn't do and how to solve that problem. And I don't think there are that many teams in the world that can take advice and that kind of criticism and turn it around right away. And after that, we sort of took off and we saw a lot of players finding their form in the middle of that tournament, including myself. I was playing in a new position. I have been typically a center forward, and under Jill, she has been playing me as a wing forward. So it takes a lot of practice and patience to be able to translate what I find my strengths are to a new position. But we really did find our form in that tournament, and I think that something that will make us the best in the World Cup is our versatility. We have an incredible amount of depth on our team, and we have the capacity to play various styles. So when we were playing against Costa Rica, which was by far the strongest opponent in that tournament that we played against, we utilized crossing and finishing and our height with Abby in the box, and it was so successful. And in other games, we're going to have to play more small passes and combine to the middle. So I think that if we're able to capitalize on all of the different talents and the different tools that we have, we're going to be a really hard team to beat.
Absolutely. And also, just looking a little bit, that was a little bit more looking inward, but looking outward, looking at the rest of the region. Somewhat on the men's side, we're looking at the same question, but how is CONCACAF women's soccer developing? And going into a year where up as many as 5 CONCACAF teams could be represented at the World Cup, is the region sort of setting the bar for women's football going into the
Well, I think on the world stage, women's football is developing a lot. I think that we hold a whole slew of different struggles than the men do because ours comes down to resources and finance. And a lot of the CONCACAF women's teams don't have that. They don't have the support of their federations. And that's why I think as Americans we're so blessed, and we know we're so blessed and we're so grateful for the opportunities that we have because we have the support of our federation when we play and we have the resources to be successful on the world stage. But coming into that tournament, we heard about Trinidad not having any money when they flew into the United States and other teams in the same situation. But I think that the awareness of women's soccer is growing so much that will put a pressure on the federations to start stepping up and supporting their women's teams. And also in the CONCACAF region, I think soccer is really beloved. And I think that despite the fact that these teams don't necessarily have all the resources to be, top competitors in the World Cup, the fact that the women are playing at such a young age, at such a high level, really makes a big impact on what they're able to do at this level.
And again, just looking at that, sort of zooming out a little bit further, and we sort of touched on it already, but in the future, and looking forward, women's football, and seeing, you know, another iteration of women's league in the U.S., and hopefully it's showing signs of success, and hopefully it continues to be that way. Where do you see women's football in 5 to 10 years?
I think everyone who plays the game right now has really high hopes for where we can be in the next 5, 10 years. I think it's a big moment for women in sports, and it is our duty as ambassadors of the sport to keep pushing our level so that more people want to watch, pushing for equality, and I think that that's a big motivation for all of us as female athletes. Not only do we want to inspire young girls to play, but we want to give them a good platform to play on, and I think that the best way we can do that is by speaking out and by also by setting the bar really high so that our sport is entertaining to watch and we have fans who are buying tickets to our games. I think that a lot of the countries around the world have improved so much that the competition for this World Cup will be the highest it's ever been. And that's a phenomenal thing for all of us. We're all very thankful for that because it just means that in different countries, people are paying more attention to women's sports and that, you know, women's rights in general are growing around the world. So I have really high hopes for this World Cup and the next. And I think that that is something that's in the front of all of our minds as we play.
Well, Kristen, I actually have a question for you from Twitter.
All right.
HawksFan2350 wants to know who your favorite players, your favorite soccer players were growing up, and did you use any of them to model your game after?
My favorite soccer players growing up. Well, you know what? Actually, as a young player, youth player, I wasn't exposed to as much soccer as I wish I had been. Of course, I followed the U.S. Women's National Team through that 99 World Cup, and a lot of those players were my inspiration at that moment. And actually, my mom was really into Pele at the time, and we watched old videos of Pele. And we used a lot of his workout videos to get training tips and shooting exercises for me. So growing up, he was the number one soccer player in the world in my mind. And I tried to shoot like him and use his tips of how to get a shot up quickly and how to dribble through the cones. And I watched his videos and I went out to the field and I modeled everything after that.
It's funny you mentioned that. When I was playing at a totally different level, in high school, I was at a soccer camp, and you know, it was a sleepaway soccer camp, and they showed films at night. And one of the things that I remember was watching Pele highlight reels of Pele with the Cosmos from you know, years and years ago. It stuck in my brain. That's a heck of a player.
Yeah, he's tantalizing.
I got one more question.
Especially for 8-year-old Kristen. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
No, it's all right. Especially for 16-year-old Russ. Anyway, so got a one more question for you. I have to admit, I read your blog. It's a great blog, by the way. Football's Kristen Press at blogspot.com.
That's right.
And I noticed that you the one of the posts that you had, you quoted Pink Floyd. Now, I am a music snob, and my absolute favorite band, top of the food chain for me, is Pink Floyd. Did you pick it out of a hat, or are you actually a Pink Floyd fan?
I am not a Pink Floyd fan, I'm sorry to say it, but I do think that they have some really good and relevant lyrics. I do like the lyrics a lot.
Oh, that's great. Guys, you can find Kristen Press at Kristen Press on Twitter. You can find her blog, Football's Kristen Press, at blogspot.com. Kristen, thank you very much for coming on the show today. And we
thank
wish
you for having me.
We wish you all the best with the upcoming World Cup, and hopefully we'll see you there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
We're going to cut to break right here. Coming up, we're going to talk MLS playoffs and a little bit of a 12-bus trip going down to D.C. That coming up, you're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsports.com.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.